It Takes Two with Amy and JJ. Amy's out today, so what a great day to cater lunch into the studio and have a conversation with some old friends. Paul Juergens is in here with us today. How you doing, Juergy?
Good. Thanks for inviting me. I was waiting in the hallway because I thought I was going to be seated, but I guess I've only done this one other time, and so
it's hard to get employees, so we've had to get rid of the host stand.
Right, I get it.
Unfortunately, but there will be mints afterwards.
Juergy, you missed the second half of the title of the segment.
Seat yourself. And that's Eric Johnson on the board now, too. And joining us as well in the studio is Charlie Johnson. Charlie, how are you?
I'm just fine. Thank you for this lovely meal.
You're very welcome. It's from Mas Tequila. Have you been out there before?
I'm sorry to say I haven't been to that place, but I think now I'm going to go.
Oh, there you go. And I saw you had a beef burrito, same as Juergy. Eric Johnson's working on...
I'm not going to attempt to butcher the Spanish name of it, but it is essentially some fancy nachos.
There you go. You know, it's amazing because every time we bring in food for this segment, I get to bill it to like the company, right? Mm. Like, isn't that nice? Like someone else like takes care of the bill. So to me, it's like, well, have whatever you want. I love being able to tell people like, just pick whatever you want off the menu. It's all great stuff. And then just enjoy.
Amy texted me a couple of days ago and wanted to know what I wanted. And I just said, what's the name of the restaurant?
Mas Tequila.
I just said one bottle will be fine.
Are you Blanco, Añejo, Reposado?
By the way, the name of this restaurant has tested the complete breadth of my Spanish speaking, because I know it says more tequila.
Right? See.
Well, I know baño. Yeah, so
there you go.
Si and baño. That's about it.
And Charlie, well, let's talk about foreign languages. Charlie, you just told me you're heading out to Germany tomorrow.
Saturday.
Mm-hmm. And so how's your German?
Well, I took 2 years of high school German and one semester of German at Concordia, and it's not very good. I can say wie geht's Ihnen.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Ich kann nicht find mein Kugelschreiber.
Not bad.
Or Bleistift, which is, one of those is a pen and one is a pencil. I can't remember which.
Oh, well, writing utensil.
I certainly hope I don't have to go to the Krankenhaus, which is the hospital. Yes.
So,
but my favorite German word is, if everything is just fabulous, you would say ausgezeichnet.
And was that roughly translate to?
I don't know. Great.
Outstanding. I think it's outstanding.
Outstanding. Yeah, basically.
That's good.
Yeah.
And probably some Oktoberfest celebrations while you're there too, which will be
whether
really
there are or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it'll be fun. It's going to be fun. I've never been to Frankfurt, been to Berlin, so this will be different.
That's great.
Be good.
And you got to have a Frankfurt when you're in Frankfurt.
I may, yeah. Probably more like a brat or something, right?
I don't know. What do the Germans actually call, like if you're to order sausage, which I think is pretty typical, like what do they call it?
It's probably not what you're expecting.
It's a brat.
Is it a brat? Yeah. A bratwurst?
I have no idea.
Yeah, wurst is sausage, and each town has their own. That's Frankfurter. Is from Frankfurt.
Oh.
In Berlin, I believe it's an ice cream dish, is like their city dish, a Berliner. That's
maybe
why
Eric should go with you, Charlie.
So, so much like Charlie, I took a couple of years of German in high school and a little bit in college and have been to Germany a couple times.
So wasn't there a big flap when John F. Kennedy went and stood at the wall and said, Ich bin ein Berliner?
Right,
he's really saying he added, was some sort of pastry.
Yeah, he added the ein. Yeah. Which turns it from a proper into a, you know, it changes the parts of speech. He should have just said, Ich bin Berliner. But he put the ein in there and then changes it to ice cream cone, I think is there. But yeah, Frankfurt.
People forgave him.
Yeah, I think.
Some people did. Yeah.
My grandfather on some of his travels ended up with a piece of the Berlin Wall. Oh. And after he passed, my sister has it, and she proudly displays it as, you know, this important piece of history.
It is. People shouldn't forget.
No, they absolutely shouldn't forget.
I don't think anyone in Germany forgets, but over here, people, history, who cares?
Isn't it sort of amazing how quickly we forget history outside of our own borders?
Yeah.
You know, of course, we're tied to World War II, we're tied to World War I. And so those things get taught and remembered on a regular basis, but you have no idea what went on with East and West Berlin. I kind of wonder what the shelf life is on the battle in Ukraine, you know, after the dust settles, like how often will we speak of that in the future?
We'll get a little ways to go on that one, but I would question whether if you asked any, you know, if you asked 10 graduating high school seniors some mildly specific question about World War II, if they would really know the answer.
No.
There's a.
And I'm not dissing him. I just no. It's just not the way it's not. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Well, I remember when I was in high school, the emphasis on World War II was all about the front line in Europe. We barely talked at all about, you know, the dropping the bomb in Japan. You know, the fallout from the fact that this, you know, was a world war and all of the things that happened during that time. You know, you see a poster of Rosie the Riveter and you're like, all right, this section is done. And my in-laws have good friends, and one of them is from Germany, raised in Germany, and came over here to work at one of the sugar plants, was one of the designers of the sugar plants. And I asked him, I said, how do they teach World War II in Germany? And he goes, it's years long of study.
Yeah.
Because it's so important to our history. And you'd think like, okay, well, yeah, wouldn't you want to just gloss over that? But it's no, it's that not forgetting that you said, Charlie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible that way. You know, I had a train of thought and I lost it. But I will go back to when I was in Berlin a few years ago, I took the hop on, hop off tour, you know, because I didn't have that much time. And you shouldn't eat when we're doing these things. You know? You gotta stop and belch. It's like, come on.
Just turn away from the mic.
So anyway, I hopped off at Checkpoint Charlie, which I guess wasn't named for me. Anyway, so I went into the museum they had, the Checkpoint Charlie Museum. It's fascinating stuff. They even had a car, a tiny little car from the 50s, I suppose, that had been used to smuggle people across.
Really?
And it's just, it's, people should go see that stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone should have to go to Auschwitz.
Yeah.
Or Dachau or one of those places and see what it was like. Because nobody seems to really understand what can happen and what had happened. It was an awful period. And then also, I was going to say, I recently read a book, can't remember the name of the author, but it was about it was about London during the Blitzkrieg.
Yeah.
It was all about Winston Churchill and his family and how they lived throughout that. Fascinating how they got through that thing, you know, as bomb after bomb rained on London, you know, and how they got through it and how in the meantime, that was when he was virtually begging FDR to get in the war or at least give us supplies. In fact, it was at that point that whole Lend-Lease program came out where they because there were a lot of, you know, the Congress was kind of isolationist at that time, wanted nothing to do with it, at least until Pearl Harbor got attacked. So FDR came up with this Lend-Lease program and started shuffling materiel over to London, and that helped them. It helped them a lot. So
there's a comedian named Eddie Izzard who does an amazing piece. So he's British, and he takes Americans to task in one of his specials from the 90s, and he goes, you know, in America, you're like, we've restored this building to what it looked like over 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And he goes, and we've got castles that are thousands of years old. But he talks about how, you know, Americans like to teach World War II is like, we rolled in and we saved the day. And he goes, at that point, the British are throwing pots and pans, right? There's nothing left. They've done everything they could fighting this battle. And, you know, London devastated.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
First time I was in Berlin was in 1972, right after I graduated from college. That's now everyone knows how old I am, if they can do math. So there was still some. This was in 72. There was still some leftover rubble on the streets in Berlin from those attacks, and it was just like, wow, that was 25 years ago at that point. You know, 27 years ago. So yeah, it takes a while to build back up.
I read an interesting article talking about how they were finding unexploded bombs still in London, like as recently as like 20 years ago. Things where, you know, like if they
ordnance.
Had just been digging, yeah, it was just amazing.
The name of that book, by the way, is called The Splendid and the Vile, and I can't remember who wrote it, but
Splendid and the Vile.
Yeah, it was very fascinating. Yeah. If you're interested in that kind of stuff.
You've done a lot of traveling, I know, Jurgi.
Yes, not to Europe, though.
So any particular reason? Like, you're just like, nope, I don't like putting mayonnaise on everything.
You know, probably time and distance, as far as the travel time. I've been to Hawaii and Mexico and the Dominican and Jamaica, a number of times.
You notice these are all vacation destinations.
Yeah, hey, why not, right?
On cruise ships. But that's, you know, that's, my wife was in that business for 40 years. And so that's, she just was in Europe recently, and Rome and Paris. And
you know where I'm dying to go right now is I want to go to Australia.
Mm. See, there, I don't think I could take the flight. I think
you don't think so?
I just, I 4, 5, 6 hours on a plane for me, I think, is about this. About as much as
it's
I can
a
take.
Long ride.
Yes, it is.
I'm a fan. I like waiting in lines. I know I'm a weirdo when it comes to that, but I do like waiting in lines. And I feel like a plane is just a, you know, an 11-hour line. You're just not moving anywhere. You're getting things taken care of. But I think,
but you can watch movies.
You can watch movies, and it's so much easier nowadays. I remember traveling with my sister to visit my grandpa's girlfriend in Switzerland, and we brought a little DVD player with us, but I forgot to bring batteries.
Oh, nice.
So now I had to lug this thing all over wherever we went, never being able to, like, really, truly use it. Because I don't know if you've seen the price of batteries in Europe, but it's very expensive. So was camera film the first time I went over there. Kodak must be very rare in the European nations, or at least in the tourist areas I was in.
Yeah. It costs money to travel, JJ.
It really does. It really does.
Especially if you want to take pictures.
You're listening to
and
Seek
eat.
Yourself. Yeah, and that's the thing on vacation is I want to try everything. Mm-hmm. I want 4 or 5 meals a day when I'm somewhere that I'm not used to. Even if it's in, you know, like in Europe was the first time I'd ever eaten curry. And then I came back to the United States and I'm like, I got to eat more of this curry. Why is this not on the menu every single place I go to? And they're like, have you tried American curry? We haven't really finalized that yet. You're listening to Seat Yourself right here on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 FM KFGO. It Takes Two with you until 2 o'clock today. Walk right in, set right down. Daddy, let your mind roll on. It's Seat Yourself on It Takes Two with Amy and JJ, Paul Juergens, Eric Johnson, Charlie Johnson, all in the studio with us right now.
And Seat Yourself, as Juergens should do that. He shouldn't be up dancing around this.
I know, right? It's so embarrassing,
dancing
isn't
all
it?
The time.
Well, and you know, you can only say something like that if you've known and had a friendship with someone for as long as you guys have, right? You can it's gentle
ribbing. We go
way
back.
So, do you remember the first time you guys worked together in some capacity?
I have no idea. Well, we've never worked directly together, but I started on radio here in 1980. Not here. But
wow, you're a lot younger than I thought you were.
Yeah. And so I came to KFGO in 1983. I was at a small Moorhead radio station, which... KVOX,
mm-hmm.
and
it still exists somehow. Doesn't
well,
it?
Yes and no. It was 1280 KVOX. Okay, uh-huh. When I started, and then it was came over here in a previous ownership, and it was 1280 that turned into a sports station.
Yeah.
The Ticket.
Yeah,
and now it's been transformed into 740 The Fan, different frequency.
Okay,
now 1280, I believe, is the signal is the Catholic network here.
They bought that license.
Yeah, and they're still in the, at least their equipment is still in the studios in south of Moorhead on 75, the old KVOX.
Yeah,
studio.
There's still a tower there, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a couple of towers. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I drive by there all the time.
So, Charlie and I suppose when I came here, you were at KTHI at that time, or were you at KX4?
If you were in 1883, I was still at KX. I didn't go to 11 until late 88.
All right.
December of 88.
But we used to work with Channel 4. KFGO News Department, mm-hmm. and then with 11 when Charlie was there, and we would, it was, you know, long before email and that type of thing, and I'd talk to his assignment editors and Charlie almost on a daily basis.
Yeah, yeah.
We traded
tips.
Julie Holgate.
Yeah, yeah, we had a good thing going because we weren't a mega media-opolis. You know, he was radio and I was TV, and we figured out we could help each other out.
Right. So. Story tips and different things we were covering that day, and we worked closely together for many years.
Well, and think about the stuff that you both covered at the same time, some of the things in my lifetime that are just, you know, the kidnapping of Gina North, the 97 flood.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even something like the building of the Fargo Dome, mm-hmm. you know, like mm-hmm. the stories that, you know, encapsulates a lot of my growing up in Fargo.
The shootout at Medina.
Medina, I was just going to mention that one.
My first... major assignment.
That was 83, here. Yeah.
Yes, it was.
It was February of 83.
February of 83, and it was my first major assignment here to cover the trial.
It consumed us.
And it was the first trial.
Yeah.
It was the first trial that I'd ever covered. And it was a federal court trial, and so the news director at the time said, well, we're going to hire you. And And then this shooting took place. And then some months later, the trial took place in federal court, U.S. District Court downtown. And I was a young Cub reporter. I mean, I didn't really know what I was doing.
Court can be hard when you don't know what's going on.
Yeah, well.
When you're a young reporter, it's like.
It was very difficult.
Wait, what did they just do? What?
Right. And so what was difficult for me is to hone in on the bullet points. What was the most important part of the testimony that we've just heard? And it was difficult. So
now we call that the takeaway.
Yes.
Yeah. What's the takeaway?
So it was difficult. I made it through. And there were some younger reporters that, you know, knew that I was older reporters that knew that I was green and I was a pup. And, you know, they'd help me as they could without helping me too much because we were competitors. But Jim Corcoran of the Forum would show me around a little bit. And Jim Newman at the Forum would show me around a little bit. Carol Renner was in radio at that time.
We all helped each other
covering that.
As best we could.
And back in when I started in radio, and Charlie, you were in radio to begin with, it was highly competitive in this market. We had three or four people at KVOX. KFGO had five or six full-time news people. KQWB AM at one time had three or four full-time people.
That's how I got back to Fargo from Grand Forks.
Three or four people.
Yeah, I was their first news director. Yeah, covering everything. It was amazing how I was never home.
So at that era, you know, we're talking about at a time when you could break a story and people wouldn't know about it until they heard it on your airwaves or read it in your paper.
Right. Did not show up on their dial rotary phone.
No, right. It did not.
Yeah.
So
and then we had, and I don't know about the other radio stations, I guess, KVOX, I don't know if we had that when I began, but we had, this is long before cell phones. But we had two-way radios in our KFGO news rigs
we
could go live on the air from wherever it might be. And if we were out a distance, you know, the range was somewhat limited. But if we were east of Moorhead, as an example, Highway 10, a car crash, a fire might be, the signal wouldn't be good enough. So we would head to the nearest hill and try to get up higher.
Yeah.
And so the signal would reach Fargo on our two-way radio.
You mean like that one's high enough.
Yeah. Right.
The logistics of
do you
of
read me?
Go broadcasting ahead. And that's within JJ and my lifetime.
Yeah.
Right? Just how much the logistics and the technology has
I remember
changed.
Our call sign WHE 986. That was the KFGO frequency that was assigned to us, and
oddly I can't remember the Channel 4 one.
Technically we were supposed to, when we signed off or when we were done with that, we were FCC, I think, required us to say, WHE 986 clear.
Yeah. Wow. We didn't. We never did that.
No. You never followed the rule.
No, the FCC wasn't listening.
I know a major game changer in communication for farming when I grew up was the implementation of business band radio.
Right.
And so I
CB
assume that.
And business band, yes.
I assume that went over to the news broadcasting also.
You know, and the frequencies in those days, I think I could remember ours. It doesn't matter. 166.250.
It doesn't matter.
With a police scanner.
Thanks for the detail.
With a police scanner, you could listen to the other television stations and radio stations in town.
Try to scoop them?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So we would listen to the other ones. We'd listen to them on their two-way radio.
Yeah, we had that. We listened to you guys.
I know. And I don't know if you were there or the details, but and I probably won't name channels, but the other media knew that the other media listened to their two-way radio. So there was a setup. I don't recall if it was supposedly a major fire or a shooting or some sort of major activity that didn't happen, but one of the television stations started to talk from their cars to their base and started to say, well, we're heading that way. And then, we've got so-and-so on his way. We've got a cameraman going. So the other media in town was listening to this. It was all a setup. It's all a setup. Nothing had happened. One of the competitors headed that way.
They're getting a good yuck about it.
They headed that way and got halfway and then found out that nothing had happened.
So you talk about how technology has changed. Do you remember my pal and former coworker Steve Sando? May he rest in peace.
Yes.
So Steve worked in Grand Forks for us for a while and big, you know, outsized man and great personality, really good news guy. And anyway, he ended up going to work for CBS News. He was their operations director.
East Coast, yes.
So he actually, so this was back in the 90s, and he was in charge of going. He traveled with Dan Rather everywhere in the world whenever he would go, and someone else, whoever was going, but always with Dan. And he made sure they had satellite connections. So that was his thing. And so one time I called him up. We were just chatting. We'd talk once in a while. And I was lamenting the fact, this is when I was at KVLY, that I did not have a satellite truck. I was so angry that I didn't have a satellite truck. And Steve says, oh, don't invest in that, he says. I have seen the future. I said, oh, yeah, what's the future? I have seen the future, and it's video spigots. I'm saying, really, yeah, you're just going to plug into the wall, and that'll be it. And he was the only step he missed was the wireless part of it. But he was 100% right. Nobody uses a satellite truck anymore.
No.
They're all, like, turned into bread trucks.
I was going to say, yeah, you know, now they're at food truck festivals, yeah, now, right?
So it's like, you know, it's all, it's how fast things change, you know? But I thought of him the first time I went over to the Holiday Inn after they had remodeled there, and they had a video connection in by the press room. I'm like, it's a spigot. Mm-hmm. You know, this is great. So it's, yeah, time, yeah, all that technology changes. Unfortunately, you know, the technology has changed so you can get everything on the air right now, which is good and bad. I mean, we love the idea of being able to go live when we had our live trucks, you know, and be immediate from the scene. But now that's all they do, and they have to do it. And it's like the immediacy can lead to mistakes sometimes, which I understand completely. But you have to be so careful if you're going to be on live from a scene and you don't really know what's going on yet.
Well, let's face it. There's also 1.5 million amateur reporters, too, running own YouTube channel. They've got a podcast. So, you know, I'm not going to call it straight
up
competition.
Wait, you've got a podcast?
I do have a podcast, right? Long-form interviews. Like, and then I'm just bringing it into the day job.
Yeah.
But it is, I think, interesting because now there are so many people out there searching for that. And, you know, you look at what was the podcast, podcast Serial, where you now all of a sudden have all of these junior investigators who are going out there and disproving things and finding out that the distance isn't what it was in court. And, man, it's just, it's a different world out there.
They cut him loose yesterday.
I saw that. Yeah. Oh, trust me. My wife and I have been monitoring it very closely.
Okay. I never listened to that podcast, so I'm just kind of on the periphery. So
at this point, it's weird because you look at the original Star Wars as being like this super special effects mecca, but by today's standards, it doesn't really, you know, live up to the hype. That's how I feel Serial the podcast is. It was the first one to do something like that. And now when you look back at it, you're like, oh, so many other people have refined this in a different way.
And I think a thing that gets looked over with a production like Serial is the amount of time and money that was behind that podcast. And so it feels like a thing you can do on your own. Go to courthouse, read a few documents, talk to some people, and figure out a crime. But the hundreds and hundreds of hours of investigative journalism that they put into that series, I don't know if it's even possible to calculate how much time and energy went into that.
Now, we have a text in our text club right now, and I'm sure neither of you gentlemen would ever do something like this, but they said, an old friend used to work for a Minnesota news network. They used to fax competition black pieces of paper just to slow them down. It would take 30 minutes just to get an all-black fax. Now, that is...
That's some dirty poker.
We still, up until about 3-4 months ago, we had a fax machine in the news department.
Oh, really?
And it went out. It quit working. And so our IT guy, he's now converted it to come in to email faxes. But there are still, believe it or not, a number of agencies, smaller sheriff's departments generally, in this region that still faxes. We still receive faxes.
Yeah. Really? So in our office, one of my young coworkers, the printer's over by his desk, a big printer that it's a combo print, scan, fax, all that stuff. Forget the fax, whatever. He brings me this fax. He says, I don't know, is this important? It's like some Nigerian prince thing. I was like, no, the only people who fax anymore are scammers. Just get used to it. Like,
we do occasionally get one from a blacktop special or a vacation special. It's on our list that comes in. But there are probably a half dozen sheriff's departments in our listening area.
That's crazy.
That still fax.
At least the paper doesn't curl up anymore.
Right.
So when Channel 11.
Hold that thought. We got to break real quick. We got, but yeah, hold that thought. You're listening to Seat Yourself on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 FM, KFGO. Baby, let your hair hang down. Walk right in, set right down. Daddy, Seat Yourself on IT2, sponsored by those South Fargo Dairy Queens. They're so great. And listen, don't listen to Joel Heitkamp. You can have ice cream even when it's cold, all right? So as the season starts to dip down.
What, he says that? What?
Yeah, he's like, well, you're not going to eat ice cream when it's cold.
What is he like? Five?
he gets one of those little headaches, I think.
Ice cream headache. Yeah, there's so much. And then our lunch today from Mas Tequila, we got some beef burritos. What did you end up calling? You're not going to butcher it.
Butcher the Spanish, but it's essentially a very upscale nacho.
Hot tip, if you ever head over to Mas Tequila, try their burrata. It's out of this world, and I only learned what burratas were a few years ago, so I've been eating a lot of them to make up for lost time. And now, Charlie, you had a thought right before we went to break.
I have no recollection of what it was.
It's gone. Okay.
I don't even remember what we were talking about.
let's touch real quick on tourism a little bit then, because
okay.
Man alive, do I see a lot of license plates from other parts of the country, yeah. So people are heading our way.
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy ever since last summer. I mean, we were off like 40% during 2020. And then early 21 was not much better. But then, like, starting mid-May to June of 21, things came back gangbusters. You know, we had a lot of events last summer. And, in fact, by the end of 2021, hotel occupancy in Fargo, Moorhead, West Fargo, for the year of 2021 actually was better than in 2019. So was revenue by a little bit. And that trend has continued. Now we're running like way ahead on revenue and occupancy. I just looked at it before I came over here. Last week's occupancy was like 71-72%. That's, you know, we had three consecutive 70% months, June, July, and August. I don't think September will last at 70, but apparently it's going to be close. But we hadn't had back-to-back 70% months since 2014. In fact, up until last summer, we had a 70% July. That was the first 70% month we'd had since 2015.
Hey, I like to hear that.
Yeah, it's great. It's really good. So far, so good.
Well, hey, hats off to your team for going out there.
Oh, it's all us, yeah.
Convincing people to come our way.
Well, I mean, our team does a great job. You know, we have a lot of sporting events that come to town, a lot of conferences and conventions. We're trying really hard to get convention space built. Jurgens, you need to be on top of it.
I was just going to ask you, would you like to make any announcement?
There are a couple of proposals out there. I'm hoping something will happen here by Christmas, that something could be decided. And also, we're trying really hard to get a performing arts center built downtown.
We got to get you on again because I want to talk. I know you sit on that.
We had a meeting last week with all the arts groups. Went really, really well. So I think there could be some momentum. The trick, of course, is finding the public funding to support these things. And we have some ideas.
Yeah.
I have ideas that could let the Dome do its renovations. We could have meeting space and a performing arts center. Nobody gets greedy.
You hear that, world? Charlie Johnson's got the ideas for you. Charlie, thank you so much for
you
being
bet.
Here for
thank
See
you.
Yourself.
Thanks for lunch.
Jurgi, always awesome. And we've got Eric Johnson there. Eric will be with me for the next hour. You still have a chance. If you want to go cheer on the FM Redhawks tonight, just text Redhawks to 35270.